hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up just a bit, myself and Craig Sandlin from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube with a special short appearance from our fearless leader, Trace Fowler, who was coaching Little Leaguers on Tuesday night. But first, let's recap the Reds game from Tuesday night. Reds trying to rebound from a 7-1 loss on Monday night, taking on a Phillies team that entered play with a 7-game win streak. Phillies pitching has been unbelievable. Their starters have only allowed a total of 4 runs during their entire 7-game win streak coming into the game on Tuesday. In the top of the first, Reds found themselves in a quick hole as Andrew Abbott gave up back-to-back doubles to JT Realmuto and Alec Bohm, 1-0 Phillies. But in the bottom of the first, Stuart Fairchild reached on an air ball that he smoked 108 off the bat right at Phillies third baseman Edmundo Sosa. He couldn't field the ball and Fairchild was safe. Then later on in the inning with 2 outs, Jamer Candelario walked to extend the inning, and then Christian Encarnacion Strand, he went down and hit a sinker low in the zone down the right field line, tied the game up at 1. In the bottom of the third, game still tied at 1, Tyler Stevenson walked, and then there was more 2-out magic from the Reds. Christian Encarnacion Strand hit a ball past Phillies third baseman Edmundo Sosa. It went down the left field line. Stevenson scored. Reds took a 2-1 lead. Ellie De La Cruz then walked. Ellie stole second base, and then Nick Martini reached on an error. Trey Turner made a great effort on a play. Looked like it was a for sure hit. Made a decent throw to Phillies third baseman Alec Bohm, but he just could not come up with it. And 2 runs would score as the ball got past Bohm. 4-1 Cincinnati. And then Santiago Espinal really made them pay when he singled home Martini. Espinal's second hit of the day, 5-1 Reds. Andrew Abbott had retired 10 of the last 11 batters entering the fifth inning, but boy, did he run into trouble in a hurry. Abbott walked the bases loaded. He was able to strike out Kyle Schwarber for the first out of the inning, but then David Bell turned to Fernando Cruz. Cruz answered the bell for sure. Cruz struck out Trey Turner on a nasty splitter, and then he got JT Realmuto to line out and end the threat. Reds still lead 5-1. And then the Reds came right back in the bottom of the fifth. Christian Encarnacion Strand singled, his third hit of the day, and then Ellie De La Cruz hit his 7th home run of the year. More on that in a minute. 7-1 Cincinnati. Reds bullpen, they were great once again. Buck Farmer threw 2 scoreless innings. Emilio Pagan threw a scoreless 8. And then Santiago Espinal capped off his first really good day with the Reds. He hit his first home run with the Reds, and it was 8-1 Reds. Sam Moll came in the 9th, his first appearance of the season coming off the IL. Did give up a couple hits, but he was able to get the job done. Reds hang on and win 8-1. Reds improve to 13-10 on the season. Right after the game, here's Fernando Cruz and one of the early leaders for quotes of the year.
We don't always talk to the relievers, but tonight the 2 biggest outs of this game were by you, my friend. 5th inning, bases loaded. It's still a relatively close game at that point. Are these moments that you kind of live for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always about big moments, and all the glory to my Lord that gave me the opportunity to be in this situation this year. And man, helping the team win in this situation means the world for me and all around me.
How are you able to get out of that situation? Bases loaded, 1 out. You retire both batters you face.
I mean, it's just about watching the game, paying attention to details, paying attention to my pitches, and leave it to the strongest of my pitches. And I just saw those guys swinging at the cut, the slider going away from them. I execute them, and then I went to my best pitch. And I executed.
The cutter is one of the best pitches in all of baseball right now. You say it's a gift from God. I love that you say that. Do you feel like it's the best that you've ever thrown in your life right now?
Yes, for sure, 100%. When you face big league hitters and those kind of names out there, and you make them like miss the ball like that, my splitter is the splitter. It's just a gift from God. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain. They don't even know how to explain. I mean, it's an unbelievable pitch that has a lot of depth and got hitters going around a little earlier than they expect.
Take us into the dugout. Ellie hits the home run, and you were the most excited guy in that dugout. How close are you guys as teammates?
I'm really close to Ellie. He's my I love him like my brother, like my little brother. I talk to him a lot, and it's exciting how he become a better player, a better teammate this year. It's exciting to see him be the first one on the clubhouse every day and the last one to leave, working on his craft. I mean, he's been an unbelievable guy and an example to follow, and he's only 22, so. He's unbelievable. The guy's unbelievable.
Here's Santiago Espinal on his great game on Tuesday night.
How'd that first one feel?
Oh, good. Really good. You know, just going out there and compete, but felt really good.
Is it more special after what kind of buzzes the tower a little bit?
Actually is, you know, especially first with the team. But, you know, like I say, I mean, it feels pretty good and it felt very precious, especially here at home. So,
I feel like you've settled in. I mean, coming over to a new team is never easy, particularly the timing of it. Feel kind of almost thankful that you're here, the opportunities you're getting?
Of course. I'm always thankful for every opportunity that I get. You know, whatever I went through is something that God puts in my path to learn, you know. And now that I'm here, I'm good, and you know, I'm thankful for the new opportunities that I'm getting with this new team.
What does it feel like turning the double plays that you've been turning recently, including tonight with Kelly?
It's been special, you know. We go out there every day to work on those stuff, you know, especially doesn't matter if they're running slow or fast, you know, we go out there and work on everything that we can.
You knew about just Ellie, the talent from watching him, just what stands out though, you know, being teammates with him, being in there with him.
I mean, you guys seen it, you know. For the little bit that I've been here, this guy just go out there and have fun. There's not a day that he doesn't go out there without a smile, you know. And I think that's kind of special about him, you know, his preparation. The way he go out there and compete with every team that is go out there. He doesn't care who's on the mound, you know. I think that's who he is, you know. That's why he's the player he is, you know, because the way he prepares himself and compete.
We've seen him run the bases and the long home runs, but are you amazed at how deep he can get to make some of those catches? The one he made tonight, the one he made against the White Sox. I mean, tonight it looked like he ran about 40 yards to get to that.
To me, it doesn't surprise me how fast he is, and we all seen it. We know the talent that he has. I hope he knows the talent that he has too. So, you know, seeing him from this side is very special, and you know, I can't wait to keep competing with him, and we keep going.
Here's Reds starting pitcher Andrew Abbott.
You seem to be in a really good rhythm. What happened in that fifth inning?
Yeah, I think I just started to nibble too much instead of just throwing the ball and let it be what it may. You know, a good hitting lineup, you can't be afraid of contact, can't be afraid to go in the zone, and I think I just got a little bit too nibbly, kind of trying to go after corners and hunting spots instead of just kind of throwing it and letting it be.
The bullpen's been clutch, certainly, on this homestand. Talk about the job they did tonight, especially when Fernando came in that bases-loaded situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that decides the game right there. Huge moment for Cruzy, you know. Saving me, for one, but then also providing a spark for a team to continue the momentum, stay on our side until it doesn't go back to them. And then everybody after that, you know, Buck to Emilio to Sam, you know, just really stepping up when I wasn't able to go long, give a lot of outs to the team. And, you know, just kudos to them and kudos to the team for playing well behind me.
Kind of helped you that, you know, you're down 1-0. Encarnacion's train kind of picked you up twice there with some key two out hitting.
Huge hitting from him. You know, Santi's homer. There's a lot of guys today that had great at-bats and then great results at the plate. And I think we understand that it's gonna happen sometimes where you don't have that, but it's just baseball's game of opportunities and failures. Like, you're going to fail today, but you got an opportunity the next time. So just wipe it, move on to the next, and, you know, let the results be what they may.
It seemed like that sweeper was working really well. What is it about that pitch for you that is effective?
I think it kind of brings me back to finishing each pitch, you know, throwing it out in front, being able to spin it. I've always been able to spin it pretty well. But I think it's good because it's a different plane. They have to worry about it horizontally instead of, like, fastballs and changeups are vertically, and curveballs are more vertically, too. So it gives them something else to look at. It keeps them off balance. And when I'm able to execute it, it's really good.
And lastly, David Bell on the Reds' big win over the Phillies.
Your offense tonight is going to get most of the headlines, but how big were those two outs that Cruz got in the fifth?
Yeah. I mean, Cruz has had an opportunity a few times to come in and just impact the game in a big way in the middle innings. And you know, a lot of the, you know, you talk about the guys at the end of the game, which is so important as well. But when it happens in the middle of the game, sometimes it gets missed. But I mean, to stop their lineup at that point where they were in their lineup, they were threatening. And, you know, Andrew had a good night, just got into a little bit of trouble right there. Really was able to shut a great offense down right there. And Fernando just, like we've talked about before, he just loves coming in those spots and helping the team and impacting the game and picking up his teammates and doing anything he can to contribute to a win. So just great pitching on top of all of it. You know, he just keeps getting better and better, but it's fun to watch and see him throw under 10 pitches and make such a huge impact in the game.
You've got Encarnacion Strand in the middle of your lineup for a reason. Tonight, one of those reasons, at any time he can be and look like just a pure hitter.
Yeah, Christian, we know he can hit. I mean, there's just no question about that. He's still a young hitter. You know, he's still getting better, and which is exciting for him and for our lineup, for our team. And that's going to continue for a long time. But at any point, he's going to be able to have big games like that. And his bats are getting more and more consistent. So he's doing everything he needs to do. He's continuing to work. He's continuing to believe in himself and just continue to play the game and get at bats. And I'm happy to put him out there every day to allow him to do that.
Yeah, Lee plays long ball again, but he makes another terrific catch, much like you used to go get the ball, I'm sure. No, does he seriously? Do you just amaze you?
That is amazing. I mean, really, if you stop and think about it, I mean, he was in left field, you know, down the line in left field, so went a long way for it. Obviously, the speed, but it's just the desire to make plays, wanting to do everything he can to get his hands on the ball. And that was a great play, but maybe an even more impressive play was the double play ball that he charged, and then Espy did a great job of turning it. But we know how important the defense can be, and he was able to help us on both sides of the ball tonight.
All right, our deep drive of the day was Ellie De La Cruz's 7th home run. Yes, already his 7th home run of the season. Ellie hit a ball 394 feet, 109.9. off the bat, put the Reds up 7-1 in the 5th inning. And our deep drive of the day, sponsored as always by Deep South Commodities. DSC is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, checking out scores around the NL Central. The Brewers lost 2-1 to the Pirates. Brewers finally on a losing streak. They've lost just two in a row, but got to start somewhere, right? Cubs beat the Astros 7-2. The Cardinals, they lost to the Diamondbacks 14-1. So your NL Central standings on Wednesday morning. Brewers at 14-8. Cubs at 14-9. Reds at 13-10. Pirates at 13-11, and the Cardinals are 10-14, and the Reds do currently hold the third wild card spot. All right, well, here's myself, Greg Sandlin from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube, and as mentioned, a little appearance from our fearless leader, Trace Fowler. Stick around at the end. I'll tell you about all the Reds minor league action from Tuesday night, and we'll also preview Wednesday's Reds game against the Phillies. All right, hey, what's going on? Welcome in to Chatterbox Reds. Hope your night's going as good as mine is. Craig, how we doing, brother?
I'm great. How are you and how is the family?
Doing well. Still here. Still on baby watch for a little bit longer. But yeah, enjoyed this nice win tonight from the Cincinnati Reds. Rumor is Coach Fowler, he might be along later on to talk about the Santiago Espinal game, because I think that's the only what thing you could call tonight. All right. Well, Craig, I actually want to start this show because I don't want to forget about this, because it was a pivotal point in this game. And when you win a game 8-1, it's very easy to forget about it. But the game was hanging in the balance. It was 5-1. Is that correct, Craig?
It was 5-1. You're talking about when Fernando Cruz came in?
Yeah, Fernando Cruz comes in, one out. Philly's number two hitter up, Trey Turner, bases loaded, one out. And David Bell decides to pull Andrew Abbott. I love the call at the time. I don't know how the chat feels about it. I thought it was the correct call. Abbott had given up a lot of hard hit balls, had just walked three straight batters, even though he did battle back to get Schwarber out. But when you're talking about Trey Turner and JT Realmuto and Alec Bohm, those are three hitters that are really good against left-handed pitching. I like that David Bell was aggressive. You have to pick your spots to be aggressive. You can't pull your starter in the fifth inning every single night. But this felt like a game you needed to do that. You know you're staring down Zach Wheeler still in this series. You know you got to get one here. I love that move. And then Fernando Cruz, on top of that, just continues to deliver. I think that is probably the one point of the game that I think deserves the most attention.
Yeah, I agree with you. So Abbott starts off the fifth. He goes out and he walks Pache, Sosa, and Rojas, the 7-8-9 hitter, right? So now you've got bases loaded with the top of the dangerous Phillies lineup coming up. He gets the strikeout of Schwarber looking, right? So David Bell could be thinking to himself, all right, Andrew Abbott has shown time and time again that he can battle and get out of these scenarios. But it also has the opportunity, quite frankly, that if you allow that inning to get away from you, that could be a backbreaker to extend a losing streak for longer than necessary, right? Yeah. So you've got the tying run at the plate and an opportunity to really put away this game potentially with the top of the lineup coming in, kind of break the hearts of Phillies. And while Abbott obviously has the ability to battle, we talked about it in the past, and Trace even mentioned it last night, when the bases are loaded in your high-pressure situations, Fernando Cruz is the go-to guy on this bullpen right now. And it worked out tonight because you bring him in as a righty and you've got to face Trey Turner and JT Realmuto. And quite frankly, as Fernando Cruz does, he gets the job done, picks out the strikeout of Trey Turner and induces the line out from JT, which, yeah, it was a huge moment. And again, I mean, Fernando Cruz now continues to lead the league in strikeouts by a certain pitch. He's got 18 now on that pitch. And I mean, it's just nasty. And he's showing the ability really to give the Reds some high leverage outs, which is really vital for them in these competitive games.
Yeah. Just a huge spot in the game. You can't do that. You cannot do that every night, but I think Hunter Green deserves a little bit of credit for going seven innings last night in a game that they were never going to win. That matters. Bryce Spalding, our good friend, put out a really good tweet about that, really kind of elaborating well on that, talking about how, look, every game, even the losses, are still part of the 162 puzzle. And Hunter Green going seven innings last night allowed David Bell to be able to pull Andrew Abbott in a key spot with a 5-1 lead. This Phillies lineup is dangerous, and that was the spot you put an end to it right there with Fernando Cruz. And all the credit in the world to Fernando Cruz for executing. But I love that move by David Bell. And you got one win against the Phillies. Reds can find a way to get one of the next two, much to the dismay of our good pal Reed Mouse. The Reds will get the tiebreaker over the Phillies. And I think that's important because these are two teams that I think have a very good chance of fighting for wild card spots. The Phillies probably aren't going to win the NL East because you have the Atlanta Braves. The Reds might be able to win the NL Central, but the Brewers look really, really good so far this year. And the Cubs are a pretty good team as well. So anytime you can get one of these tiebreakers, it might seem silly, but man, if you end up tied at the end of the year, it sure isn't going to be silly. And that's a possibility of happening. So I think that is something just to kind of keep, you know, very, very small in the back of your head these next 2 days.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So, you know, not only does Hunter Green deserve credit, but then They go to Casey Legamina, and obviously as a successful first inning, goes 1-2-3, gives up a couple hits and a couple runs there in the second inning. But again, you're using a guy who now is already back at AAA. So yesterday you essentially used zero relievers and had a complete bullpen available to you to use at your disposal. And so while obviously seeing the box score and seeing a 7-0 loss last night, having a completely fresh bullpen after a day off yesterday, essentially with Casey Legamina being able to pick up the slack there at the end of the game, put them in a position for David Bell to feel comfortable to be able to go to his bullpen early on in this one specifically. And again, Andrew Abbott has been able to battle and be a dog, but you know, when you've got an opportunity in a rested bullpen, you're in the middle of the stretch now. Now that I look at it, you've got 12 straight days with a game. So yeah, I mean, it's big to be able to have a day where your bullpen gets a complete rest, essentially with Hunter Green going 7 and then Casey Legamina coming in for the last two.
Yeah. And on Andrew Abbott, I'd love to have fun and maybe say like, oh, if Hunter Green would have put up that line, you guys would be going crazy. In Andrew Abbott's defense, I mean, this was the second time that he saw the Phillies already this season. This is a really good lineup. He did have that. After he gave that run in the first inning, he was really dominant in the second, third, and fourth. Just ran into trouble there. Obviously, you know, with a 5-1 lead, you don't want to be walking three guys in a row. I'm sure Andrew Abbott knows that more than anyone watching the show or watching the game on TV. But Abbott had a nice year. Again, it's not something I wanted to make too much out of with that start. But I mean, obviously, the walks are the one thing that just it does seem to be maybe a little bit of a problem for this team overall early in the year with the starting pitching. It is too many walks. But again, it's just one of those things where I'm sure they know it as much as everyone else, and it's something they're continuing to work on.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how that trend plays out. So obviously Abbott and I had a great outing for the first four innings, ran into kind of a wall there in the fifth for some reason. I'm not sure. You mentioned the second inning where he went 1-2-3. Lennon Sosa with a 109 mile per hour hit off the bat. Great play by Candelario there at third, being able to make the scoop go into his left to make that play and kind of end that inning. In the third, he gives up the walk to Schwarber, but is able to keep him at first. I mean, so Abbott, you know, even in situations was able to battle. And then, like you mentioned, in the fifth, he just gives up those back-to-back-to-back walks. And he only had at the time, I think, 60-something pitches. So it's not like he was getting tired, or at least he shouldn't have been getting tired. But it is one of those things where Abbott was working the edges of the plate pretty consistently today. He was hitting his spots on the inside of the plate specifically. You heard TJ Antone talk about that towards the end of the broadcast. And so maybe it is one of those scenarios where he's just not as precise as he gets a little bit higher in the pitch count. And 65 certainly doesn't seem too high for a starting pitcher, but I don't know. It'll be something to monitor. The pitching staff certainly doesn't. We got to limit the walks for sure.
All right. Next topic. Santiago Espinal. How about that? Three hits, home run. Look, Santiago Espinal is not a great player, but the overreaction of 42 at-bats, we got to stop having big overreactions in April. He's fine. He's fine. He's fine as your bench player, your platoon infielder. He's played really, really good defense, made another nice play tonight. I think defense is more where he's going to provide this team value, but just for someone that's tried to defend, like, this guy needs more time. It was a very big breath of fresh air. So thank you, Santiago, for at least giving me another couple days of hopefully some freedom to defend your honor out here. But nonetheless, look, this is a guy that the Reds picked up. If Noelvi Marte didn't get suspended, Santiago Espinal's never on this team. It was really just good to see him have a good night.
It was good to see him go to every part of the field. It started in the second, obviously, with his opposite field single. That was off of a fastball where he kind of, I assume, based on the conversations that were happening on the broadcast, you're kind of sitting on the off-speed pitches from Sanchez. So he's sitting off-speed. He's adjusting to the fastball, being able to inside out that ball to the opposite field. And then in the third, he gets back up. gets his second hit of the night on a single to center, an RBI single nonetheless. And then obviously in the eighth, he hits his home run to left field, his first home run as a Red and his third hit of the game for a second RBI. So good to see him pick up some hits for sure, but also good to see him taking advantage of every part of the field in order to do so.
Yeah, Shane here sums it up perfectly. Santiago Espinal is serviceable, just not ideal as an everyday starter, but options are limited right now. He's the best option the Reds have right now. I know the Reds just got this player everyone's infatuated with down in Louisville. He's a left-handed batter. Espinal, when everyone's not sick, is only going to really play, for the most part, against left-handed pitchers. So it just makes sense to keep Espinal. And he's hit lefties well throughout his career. So I think he will he'll be fine. And honestly, I was expecting Espinal. I was expected to kind of have like a breakout 3 or 4 hit game, and they ought to be like three little bleeders up the middle. that's part of his game. Like, he's just a guy that makes a lot of contact, doesn't strike out a lot, which there's some value to that. I don't love a bunch of those types of hitters. I don't want a whole lineup of Santiago Espinals, that's for sure. But tonight he actually hit the ball very hard. 99, 96, 92, and 80, 86. So it's kind of funny that this was the kind of game, because I just fully expected it was gonna be three little bloop singles, but baseball worked out a little differently. Ellie De La Cruz, I don't know, man. Just when he hit that home run, just my initial reaction, just like, I can't believe this guy plays for my favorite team. And I know I said that a lot last year when he first came up and he had that incredible run to start, but he's just incredible. And right now he's an all-star. This guy's barely scratched the surface and he is an all-star right now. And that's just, it's just so cool to see him playing this well, this young, this infancy into his big league career. He's the best player on the team. Our my guy, Elliot Rearing said it today on the show. He's the Reds' best player. He is. He's the Reds' best player.
Yeah, he is. And he does it in so many different ways. And I think that's what makes it exciting, right? And obviously, you talked about the home run later in the game, but even if you look at the third inning, the thing that's been most impressive to me for Ellie De La Cruz this year is the significant improvement that I've seen in his patience at the plate. So you look at it in the third inning, he walks and then he steals second. And by stealing second, now when Martini reaches on that infield single on that pass ball by Alec Bohm, he's able to score on that play now because of his speed and because of the aggressiveness that he had on the base pass. And that's one of the things that I noticed all night tonight, especially early on. And I don't have a scouting report on Christopher Sanchez to know for sure, but the Reds certainly felt extra aggressive early on in this game. It started with Stu Fairchild right off the bat making multiple attempted steals on foul balls, but he was running early and often against Christopher Sanchez. So I don't know if the Reds just saw something in Christopher Sanchez's delivery, or they knew when he was coming for a pickoff or what it was, but they were aggressive and they were aggressive early. And Ellie, again, stealing second in that third inning, gave an opportunity to score. And they come away with a 5-1 lead after that inning and really put the game out of reach for the Reds. So, yeah, and then coming back in the fifth and hitting a 394-foot home run is definitely going to get a lot of oohs and ahs. And then, you know, the last thing I'll just mention about Ellie is, you know, he had that game earlier this year where he made a couple errors defensively. And since that point, I think he's got one error in 12 games or something like that. And it's a significantly increased workload. And I've mentioned it to you a couple times. I think I've put it on X.com as well, but I've noticed that Ellie is throwing from a different point, specifically defensively. Used to see a lot of lackadaisical throws from him down even submarine style seemingly. And now if you watch him gather on a ground ball, he's throwing from right by his ear. I mean, his delivery is much different. His approach is different. He's trying to play baseball at this point. He's still 22 years old, as we've heard a million times. He's still learning and he's still improving. So even just the improvement that I've seen defensively in this short period of time, the improvements we've seen at the plate all year, not to get ahead of ourselves, but the sky is the limit for this kid. And the one thing I would caution, and I'm guilty of this myself, is that we start to get these exorbitantly high expectations. And then when he's a really good player, he just doesn't meet these like great player expectations. I did the same thing with Joey Votto. Like during the like heart of Joey Votto's career, you expected so much out of him that even sometimes it felt like he wasn't reaching those expectations just because your expectations were so high, right? So that's the one thing I'll caution against Ellie. Hopefully not, but he's bound to slump again. He's bound to struggle at the plate. He's bound to have the growing pains that we see from every player as they go through this young stage in their career. So I'm extremely optimistic about the future. I love what I've seen from him both offensively and defensively and on the base pass. And he truly is a five-tool player at this point, hitting for average, for power. He's a plus defender and obviously a plus runner on the base paths.
Yeah, good points all around, Craig. The defense definitely deserves mention. It just feels like left field might be the most pointless position out defensively for the Reds at Great American Ballpark, because Ellie De La Cruz is going to catch half your fly balls out there. but the sure-handedness, that he's also seemed to be a lot better at the routine plays and not just the flashy plays that boost his outs above average and all that kind of stuff. And then another really good point as well, the sky is absolutely the limit for Ellie De La Cruz. I have the highest aspirations of him and belief that Ellie De La Cruz is going to be one of the best Reds players of all time. I'm going to say it. I'll say it right now on April 23rd, 2024. But this year, there's going to be ups and downs. He's going to slump at some point. He's not going. I doubt he's going to have 1,000 OPS at the end of the year. So just be cautious of that. That's okay when it happens. When he comes back down to earth, that's okay in 2024. He's young. He's developing. I'm just glad that he's given this fan base that lives and dies, and it's beautiful. That's why they're here every night watching our stupid show. It gives them a little bit of hopefully some time to breathe. We teased it right before we started. Ellie De La Cruz in a contract extension. I did say earlier, let's not get too worried about 23 games or whatever we're at right now. This really, I said I wanted to extend Ellie when he was in AAA, so it's not really, that much of like a hot take, but man, I feel like the Reds, man, you got to be doing everything you can right now. Also, there might be a little bit of a window with Scott Boras. Some players leaving his agency, some cracks in the armor with the Boras strategy of hold out till you're a free agent. You got to be doing everything you can right now to extend this guy to whatever you can, even if it's only a couple extra years. That's got to be, I think, the top priority for the Cincinnati Reds right now.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that should be the top priority for the Reds at this point. The question is, do you have two parties who are interested in making that happen, right? And you mentioned Scott Boras. He's not exactly known to be making program-friendly deals, team-friendly deals. So it'll be interesting to see how this offseason has affected Scott Boras and his approach to his young players. A lot of the players that we talked about in terms of their availability late into the offseason that were Scott Boras' clients were on the older side. We're talking about guys like Cody Bellinger and Jordan Montgomery, who have been in the league for a decent amount of time, and maybe there were some concerns about their age and their ability to continue to produce. I don't know that we've necessarily had that same struggle with Scott Boras' clients at the early stages of their career. I'm sure you might have some more information than I do on that. But ultimately, the question is are both sides interested in it, and at what level, right? Of course, the Reds have to be approaching that conversation, but every game that goes by with Ellie De La Cruz continuing to have an OPS over 1,000 or 1.0 or whatever you want to say, is another day that's going to increase his price tag. And every sliding catch that he makes in shallow left field is going to increase his price tag, and every jersey sold is going to increase his price tag. And so the sooner you can get that deal done, the better. But I also, don't know what that's going to take in order to get it done. It's obviously going to be more than a Hunter Green deal, and we've seen how some Reds fans have reacted to a Hunter Green deal.
Yeah, I think you have to be very cautious with these long-term deals. I've been a guy that says be cautious, and I don't know, maybe I have the blinders on, but I say throw caution to that, to hell with it. I mean, this is the one guy you go all out for. You risk a little bit. This is the player. This is the one. Just like Joey Votto was. Like, you hit on Joey Votto, you go now, you hit on Ellie De La Cruz. I think you got to do whatever it takes at this point.
Yeah, for reference, and I think this is ultimately probably the kind of comparison that you have to look at when you're thinking about this. So for those in the chat and those listening on Wednesday morning, the Royals signed shortstop Bobby Witt to an 11-year, $288 million contract this offseason. My expectation, without knowing for sure, is that Ellie would garner more than that. So you'd probably be looking at a 10-year, $300 million plus contract in order to keep him in the Reds uniform for a majority of his career. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, but for those people in the chat who are saying 10-year, $200 million, that's not going to get it done. The Bobby Witt contract guarantees an average of $26 million per year over the course of the deal, and I think Ellie is probably going to garner more than that. So it's one of those situations where you've got to, I think you've got to strike while the iron's hot, but you also have to be prepared for what that means for your franchise moving forward from a budget standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would just say, like, what's the big difference between 10 years, $200 million and 10 years, $300 million? Like, it's not that much more each year. It's a couple middle relievers more each year. You're putting a bunch of risk out either way. So I say go for it either way.
So if Boris comes to you tomorrow and offers a 10-year, $300 million contract, you're signing that on the spot, right?
Sign. I think it would take more than that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be more like 350. Yeah. But I mean, it's hard to know these numbers. I mean, it's hard to know what all is going into everything because there's not a whole lot of consistency with a lot of them, to be honest.
But. Right. And that's part of the question, too, and why this whole conversation matters is that timing on these deals matter. If you would have tried to make this deal happen over the offseason after last season when you kind of struggled at the end of the year, that number may be a little bit different. I don't know that it changes a whole lot. But the way he started the season, if you try and have those conversations today, I think that number is bumped up somewhat significantly versus what it was even 6 months ago. So.
Ned Flanders, extend Espinal. You know what, Ned? We don't have to extend Espinal because I got the best news for you. We have Espinal under team control through 2026, baby. Let's go. He ain't going nowhere. If you want to go see Santiago Espinal and the Cincinnati Reds, you need to check out the Game Time app. The Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace for Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer that it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the lowest price guaranteed, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. You have all-in pricing. You can toggle this feature, and it shows you the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. The lowest price guaranteed, or Game Time will credit you 110%. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app today, create an account, and use the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off your first purchase. Again, that is the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code today. All right, here he is, Trace Fowler, the SNL truther. Trace, how we doing?
I'm doing great. I don't have a lot of time to waste. I'm looking at my phone here. It says 2%. 2%. I don't know if I don't know if 2% is going to hold it. We'll find out. A couple things. Shout out to Fernando Cruz. Game got canceled, by the way. The second game got canceled. Game one went on. Got a win. That's all good and well. So shout out to the Little Leaguers. But the game two got canceled, and I got a chance to obviously head home. I got a chance to see Espinal hit a home run, and I started thinking. I was like, you know what? Our ancestors would tell a story. They'd say back in 1929, there was something that was ravaging this country. We were very concerned for the livelihoods of many men and women and families, and what was going to happen to the future of our children, and what this great country we thought we had might be despaired. But then I started watching the Reds baseball game tonight and thought, you know what? There hasn't been a more reviving, a more impactful thing that has happened in this country since the Great Depression. And it took nothing more than Espinal to hit a ball out of the stadium. And by out of the stadium, I don't really mean out of the stadium. I mean five rows above the bleachers where they start in left field. And for those that are keeping track, that is a home run. I'm on 1% now, so I got to get going, and I got to get going fast. But here's what I would say about Espinal. Congratulations to him. I'm very proud of him. I'm glad that he has now found a way to get on base a few times. That is very, very noble of him. Maybe he can consider doing it more. That's no disrespect. That's just me just being honest, if we're allowed being fair on this show. I don't know if we are. The other thing I was going to say really quickly was Ellie, amazing. He's been amazing. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on doing the whole extension thing. The only reason I'm saying that is because we have to keep in mind what this also does to the rest of the team, or what opportunities it would do for the rest of the team. This is the part, if you want to get mad at anything, this is the part you get mad at Major League Baseball. Okay, we can't jump to conclusions here and assume the Reds have to make a deal. We all know there's a line in the sand there. We have to be realistic about that line in the sand, Nick. You've been a soldier for a long time. Stay the course. You can't let Ellie get into those blinders, brother. You can't let Ellie get in those blinders. If he's going to cost $500 million for 10 years, you know it and I know it. That isn't worth it. And I love Ellie, but that's the name of the game. We'll find out what the Reds ultimately do. But otherwise, I just want to say, I don't know if I mentioned Espinal yet. Espinal, what an unbelievable double play. What an unbelievable double play. The good news is that tonight, just like Espinal, you know, a broken clock is right two times a day. So tonight, like I said, just throw away all the things you thought you knew before, because there's nothing been more inspiring that's ever happened in this country since the Great Depression. And we ought to thank Espinal for his services tonight. How many times did he get on base, Nick?
Three hits.
Three times. You put out a tweet, too. What did you say? He's been on base like four out of the last five games or something?
Yeah.
My gosh. I tell you what, I hope I'm wrong about him. And the one thing you keep saying that eventually is going to irritate me, but I'm going to let it go. I'm going to keep letting it go, is you keep saying this guy's a really good serviceable backup. Nick, he's like in the lineup every day, okay, brother? At some point, he's not a backup. Now, I do know what you're saying. I get what you're saying. Don't roll your eyes. I get what you're saying.
Are you my wife?
Oh, no.
Saying that maybe. Oh, my phone's going to die.
Doug!
How does he do that? The dude just comes in out of nowhere. He's probably been off coaching baseball. Who knows how much he even watched of this game? He probably saw the last two innings. And he just comes in here and goes on a 30-minute rant about who knows what. A little bit of everything.
Now Ellie, look, Ellie's different. Ellie is different than extending everyone. This is a guy that could be a 7-8 win player. He's different. And he's so young, too. You don't get opportunities to sign players that have the ceiling that Ellie De La Cruz has at this young age. I would not be supporting signing Ellie De La Cruz to a 10-year contract at the end of when he becomes a free agent. Like, that's not the kind of what you're getting his younger years. You're getting him into like his early 30s, which I think is a lot different than signing guys like, and I'm trying not to use players that just completely fell off the wagon, because that's such a cheap shot. I keep going like Jesse Winker, but like, that's just such a cheap shot, because like obviously he shouldn't have signed that contract. But
I mean, even the Reds signed Joey Votto to a 12-year deal when he was 28 years old. The fact that you're getting basically six seasons of Ellie at the beginning of his prime, I mean, versus a Votto deal at 12 years, where at the last 3 to 4 years, he was not in his prime anymore, you know? So signing Ellie to a 10-year deal through his age 32 season versus signing Joey Votto to a 12-year deal through his age 40 season is a very different proposition. Now, the question, and Trace mentioned it and I mentioned it before as well, is that what does it mean for your overall budget and your team as a whole, right? You've got guys like CES who you expect to be part of your team for a long time. You've got guys like Noel V. Marte who you hope will be part of the team. Guys like Spencer Steer and TJ Friedel and Will Benson and all of these guys who everybody would love for them to be a part of your team for the long haul, but it's not realistic that every single one of them is going to be able to stick around for 12 years. So obviously I think we can all agree that Ellie is probably the kind of the linchpin to it all, and the piece that holds it all together, and the piece that the Reds will build around for the next, hopefully 10 to 15 years. But ultimately what will make or break Ellie's career is what are the pieces that the Reds are able to put around him. Very similarly to how Joey Votto is viewed on a national level. Those that know that Joey is one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball history. But the truth of the matter is that he didn't have a ton of success in the postseason. And so the average everyday MLB fan does not know that Joey Votto is one of the best of all time. And so ultimately from a Reds perspective is you need a contract now that puts him even more affordable than he will be in 2 to 3 years when he's up for that contract, because paying him $30 million a year now versus having to pay him $50, $60, $70 million a year in a couple of years like the Ohtani deal, very different conversations about the Reds and what that means for their team overall.
With all due respect to Spencer Steer, with all due respect to all the other players, they're replaceable. Ellie De La Cruz is not replaceable. You can't go pick up an Ellie De La Cruz. You lucked out that you were the team that signed him. You have control of him right now. You are the only team that can negotiate on a contract with him for the next 4 or 5 years. So you got to do whatever it takes to get it done. Now, and maybe there's absolutely nothing you can do. That's a possibility. So I don't want to be like, you know, head of the fire here. You have to sign him no matter what, because there may not be any reasonable way you could sign him. But yeah, I mean, that should be priority 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 right now.
Realistically, Nick, if you were a betting man, which depending on who you ask, you may or may not be, when does a deal with Ellie get done, or does it get done?
It's so tough because you just don't see players that are as young as he is playing at this level. So there's not a whole lot of these players to really judge from. And I'd have to do a lot more like research and really deep diving into this. Like last year, like if you're in Ellie De La Cruz's camp, you're saying, yeah, hold out a little bit longer. You had a rough end of the year. Now you have 1,000 OPS. Now you're taking over baseball. Now there's no discount at this point. So I guess my thing is, at least from just trying to put myself in both parties' shoes, is if I'm in Ellie De La Cruz's camp, how much more are you going to be able to squeeze out of the Reds? Like, you know what I mean? Like how much better are you really going to get than you are right now? That's kind of where I think it's possible now, but you know, we'll have to see. Again, it's Boris has been very much wait to free agency, but free agency is a long way away from Ellie De La Cruz. This isn't a guy he's already in like his third or fourth year. He's 2 years away from free agency. You're close to that. And you're like, oh, just wait 2 more years. You're that close. He's already, you know, up at this level. All right. Well, it looks like we've got him back on the computer.
There's some really good conversations I have right now. I'm going to save them because I know that on a rainy day, we're going to need some more. We're going to need some good talk and some good chatter. The Ellie De La Cruz extension is very good. It's very good baseball chatter for, I think, a multitude of reasons, not just how much you value Ellie, but I think how much you could argue, you know, what the landscape of Major League Baseball looks like as a whole in 10 years. Like, our contract's going to continue to go up and up and up and up. And do you find yourself in a position where, for lack of a better term, Joey Votto's contract on the back end of his career, on the back end of that deal, it doesn't look anywhere like what it looked like when you first signed him? Or is there a situation where the values change significantly? We just seen with the Boris guys, you alluded to it earlier, where they didn't get anywhere near what they thought they were going to get. Is that because owners have just decided, you know what, we're not going to do these crazy long extended deals anymore with guaranteed money? I don't know. It's hard to say. As I think that there's reasonable conversation on both sides of the aisle with Ellie. And I would just, my slight pushback would be this, Nick. Like, what makes Ellie unbelievable right now is very much his unbelievable athleticism. And I'm not saying that his athleticism won't translate for his entire career. I'm just saying that I would be apprehensive to say, okay, what does he look like when he's 31 to 37, depending on how long the deal is, right? Like, is he the same? Is he going to steal as many bags? Is he going to be running 125 feet into the outfield to make plays? What is it? What does he look like then? Because I think we could all agree, and this isn't a knock on Ellie, but I think we could all agree that the one thing that we ooh and all over about Ellie is just his pure athleticism and his God-given abilities. And we all know inevitably, like, you can't be that uber talented and not be successful. It's literally almost impossible. But we don't look at Ellie and be like, wow, that guy looks like he's been polished. He's been playing the game like perfectly since 5 years old. You know what I mean? So And again, I'm not here to denounce any extension under any circumstance. I'm just going to say, like, we got to be careful, depending on what the financials look like as a small franchise, to get over our head again. And again, it's not anybody's fault, right? Like, it's not Ellie's fault. We shouldn't feel bad. Like, oh, we get upset that Ellie doesn't want to have an extension with us. I just don't know if it's in the cards. And I don't. But my main point is this: is like, we should enjoy him while he's here, regardless. Like, this isn't like a, I don't really give a damn. I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm going to watch Ellie De La Cruz for the next 4 to 5 years, regardless. And if they end up signing him to an extension, all right. And I hope it's something that this front office in Nick Kroll, we trust, they can swallow and say, this isn't going to limit us. Because Craig was right. It takes two to tango, but also it also takes the front office to think to themselves, okay, we're not overextending ourselves here to where if this doesn't go, and I hate to bring up it, but I'm going to do it because you always do it, Nick, is there's obviously injury in this game as well. Like, you can't risk an unbelievable amount of stuff just on one guy, even though I agree with you, Nick, he's not really replaceable. So I think that's a fair argument to have for hours on end about Ellie being extended. So good talk, by the way. By the way, you guys are doing a great job. I was watching your show. Fantastic job.
Well, unless Ellie gets extended in the next 2 months, that conversation is only going to grow larger and larger as
maybe
the months and months go on and the years go on, the closer he gets to free agency. It's definitely going to be something that's going to become such a huge, huge just conversation in this city.
Don't you think Major League Baseball, and I guess this is where, like the franchise tag that the NFL has, like, and I'm not trying to, I'm not, everyone thinks I'm like, basically Reed's going to say I'm a communist. I'm not trying to like downplay the earning potential of these players, but it's like Major League Baseball's got to find a way to make it to where these franchises, whether it be us or the Pirates or whoever else, that if they really value a guy, that there's a way for a small market team to be able to keep somebody that they homegrown and essentially they franchise tag them and they have the ability to take some luxury taxes from somewhere else and compensate the smaller franchises for keeping some of their guys. So I don't know, food for thought. But anyways, I'm gonna let you guys finish up your show. I just want to say, everybody, love the banter in the chat. You guys are elite. I don't know if Craig's actually been fortunate to do this a lot. When you're doing the show, Nick, like, we kind of look at the chat a little bit, like, you see it, it's gone. Like, you see it, it's gone. You see it, it's gone. I tell you what, to just consume these lovely people like I just did for the last half hour. I mean, I'm just reading every single one, man. And I mean, there's some funny dudes in there. There's some funny people in there. There's some people not so funny either. There's some losers in there. I'm not going to call them out, but there's a lot of funny people in there. You guys can figure out who I'm talking about of yourselves.
We still got to talk about Christian Encarnacion Strand.
Right. You guys got a long show to do.
The poor guy had a three-hit night, and he's been pushed all the way back. So we're going to talk about him. Did not need to get sent down to Louisville. He's swinging the bat really, really well right now. And that first RBI, I mean, that pitch, some of the pitches that he does damage with are unbelievable.
So, yes, right? Let's start with the positive, right? I think what CES is able to do with some pitches is incredibly impressive. Tonight he had three contacts above 90 miles an hour, 93, 99.6, and 100.5. His hardest hit ball of the night was a line out, nonetheless. Look, I think that it's incredibly important for CES to get off the snide. I think that's the first and foremost thing I want to say. Having him in this lineup as a dangerous piece for opposing pitching to be thinking about makes this lineup so much more dangerous than it is without him, right? On the flip side, yes, that pitch, like, he's got to work on the chase rate, but let's focus on the positive, on the positives tonight. And that is the fact that, like you mentioned, it's an RBI double in the first. Ultimately, on the night, he ends up with three hits. He's got two RBIs, including a double. Scores twice as well. His batting average is up over 200 now. I mean, having CES get off that snide, Espinal get off that snide. Will Benson got a hit tonight His first in, I think, 19 at-bats. So, I mean, if this lineup can get hot, it's dangerous. It is dangerous, and CES is a big part of that.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's only walking in 1.1% of his plate appearances, which I don't think is going to keep up. I mean, I think he's eventually going to get that up. You don't really see a lot of players that have a lot of success that are below, like, you know, even some of the ones that are really overcome that. You don't really see anyone really have success unless it's really like above 5% outside of maybe like one bloop year, like you know, like I'm pulling it up, for example. Tim Anderson had 1 year where he only walked in 2.9% of his plate appearances and actually had a great year, hit 335. I think he got MVP votes, I think he was maybe a finalist that year. But obviously that didn't sustain because Tim Anderson kind of fell off a cliff as well. So he's got to get that up a little bit. I don't think you want him to change too much of what makes him great. But there does need to be probably a little bit more of a balance there. But nonetheless, it's good to see him have some success. The Reds really, really need that bat, especially with the guys that they're missing right now. It'll be interesting. It'll be really fascinating to see what that walk rate looks at the end of the year. That might be like the one thing that I'm most fascinated in, because it's not going to stay that low, but I just don't know how high it's going to end up.
Yeah, obviously the 1.1 walk percentage is literally the first percentile. His chase rate is third percentile as well. He's chasing 41.1%. So, I mean, those two numbers obviously align. So if he can get that chase rate down, the walk percentage will hopefully go up as well. What's interesting to me is that despite his obscene chase rate, he's barreling in the 79th percentile. I mean, he still is hitting the ball hard despite the fact that he's chasing all these balls out of the zone. Way too early. I mean, but we saw guys like Vlad Guerrero make a career out of hitting bad balls. So it's not that it can't be done, but certainly as a young player, you'd like to see him lay off of those a little bit more. But yeah, I think a little bit is just, he's just pressing, you know, he knows the expectations on him, I'm sure. And, he's just got to calm down. Once you kind of get in a groove, I think it'll happen. But he's young.
Yeah. Reds are playing pretty good defense, Craig. Obviously, Ellie has made some great plays. I know Candelaria, I can't remember. Was it scored in air later on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was actually the Reds had only had like two errors in the last like 12 games. But Candelaria made a really good pick early in the game. And that's something that's kind of stood out from him, is that he's a really solid, sure-handed defender over at third base. And now maybe it's partially because of how bad some of the Reds' third base defenders have been in recent memory. But he's really, really solid down there. And I mean, you know, and also like a guy like Espinal made a nice play, but the Reds defense has at least, maybe it's just completely masked right now, but it's gone from something that was a complete liability to something right now where it's not something you're seeing as a problem on a night to night basis. It's not great overall, but it's been a much more serviceable over the last couple weeks. And that's just something nice until you're holding out till a guy like Noelvi Marte comes back. It'll be interesting to see if the Reds, what they do with Candelario when Marte comes back. Do they move him to second? Do they move him to first? And then you have CES more DHing. That'll be kind of a fascinating transition. That's something that I don't know if we've really talked about or really, really thought about talking about so far. But that's just something I think that will be fascinating to watch as we kind of go on a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that Jamer made a really nice play tonight. I thought the error was a difficult play. I don't really fault him a whole lot. I think this was coming into tonight. I'm not sure if it's updated or not, but you know, Candelario now at third base, he's got one error in 36 attempts. I mean, he's making the plays, you know, and quite frankly, he's been making some really quality plays as well. It's not that he's just making the routine ones. It feels like he's also making, you know, the difficult ones, which has been a welcome thing. So Yeah, I think once Marte comes back, it's a larger conversation for sure. But ultimately, I think he just reverts back to the role that you expected him to play coming into the season, and that's depth and that's versatility. You've got guys across the entire infield who are not able to take many nights off because of the lack of depth now across the infield. And so when he comes back, it will just give them that flexibility to be able to address it in a way that makes sense for them. And that means giving days off and kind of playing matchups a little bit more than they've been able to right now. I mean, that's what David Bell wanted to do coming into the season.
All right, well, let's get you caught up on all the Reds minor league action from Tuesday night. We'll start off with AAA Louisville. They won 14-9 over Nashville. In fact, they beat Nashville so bad that Nashville had to bring in a position player to pitch late in the game. Bats improved to 10-12 on the year. It was really great to see Blake Dunn back in the lineup. He was 0-3, but did walk and drove in two runs. First time Blake Dunn has started in a game since April 10th, as he's been dealing with some sort of injury. Great to see him back in action. And I tell you what, Blake Dunn can get it going here at some point. He might find his way up on the big league roster as a guy that can play center field, play some good outfield defense. I think this Reds team could probably use him. Another great day, though, for Mike Ford, 3-4. Double, he drove in three runs. Rhys Hines, 1-4, made that one hit count. It was a double, a 3-RBI double. Connor Capel, he was 0-4 with a walk. Christian Roa, he made his first start of the season coming off an injury. The talented pitcher just gave up two earned runs over four innings pitched. Did walk four, but struck out five. Roa's a guy that definitely has a lot of talent. Like many pitchers in this Reds organization, struggles with walks, but he definitely has a lot of swing and miss in his game. Tony Santion, he pitched a scoreless inning as well. He just gave up one walk and struck out two. All right, down to Double-A, Chattanooga, they lost 3-2 to Birmingham. The tough season for the Lookouts continues. They are just 4-11, but one major bright spot down in Chattanooga is reliever Zach Maxwell. He threw two shutout innings, did not give up a hit, just walked one and struck out four. Maxwell has not allowed a run this season over six innings, just allowed one hit, three walks, and he has struck out 13 batters in his six innings pitched. Zach Maxwell is a very, very talented pitcher. They can get the ball up over 100 miles per hour. Not a whole lot on the offensive side. Austin Hendrick was 1-5, struck out four times, but his one hit was a RBI double. Tyler Callahan 0-3 with two strikeouts. All right. Down to High A, the Dayton Dragons, they won 6-3 over Lansing. Dragons improved to 7-9 on the season. Jay Allen was 2-3, hit his third home run of the year, and also walked and stole a base. Allen coming off a bunch of injuries last year, just actually got activated back off the IL this year. He's off to a great start from when he's played. I did, however, hear that Allen was pinch hit for late in the game. Hopefully it was just taking him out of the game as he's kind of getting back in. I didn't see anything official one way or the other, but something to monitor, and hopefully nothing, because Jay Allen is off to a fantastic start to the 2024 season. Hector Rodriguez, great as well, 2-5, hit his second home run of the year. Sal Stewart, 2-5, hit a triple. Logan Tanner, the catching prospect, the Reds' 2022 second-round draft pick, he hit his first home run of the season with the Dragons. Cam Collier, a rare off night. He was 0-5. All right, and last but not least, down to low A, the Daytona Tortugas were blanked 4-0 by St. Lucie. Tortugas, the only team at 500, fall to 500 at 8-8 on the season. Not a whole lot going on this one. Alfredo Duno was 0-4. Ricardo Cabrera, 1-4. Carlos Sanchez, 0-3 with a walk. All right, well, Reds and Phillies, game three of this four-game series, 6:40 p.m. on Wednesday night. Reds will be going up against Spencer Turnbull. Comes in 2-0, 1.23 ERA. Turnbull was a guy that was supposed to just be a placeholder in the Phillies rotation until Tajuan Walker returned. And their manager, Rob Thompson, said early last week that Turnbull would either move to the bullpen or they would go to a six-man rotation, as Walker is supposed to be returning any day now. But Turnbull, in his last outing, he took a no-hitter into the seventh inning against the White Sox. he's just having a really, really impressive season. So it'll be interesting to see with Turnbull. I mean, he's been incredible, but not a guy they were expecting to put in the rotation. So maybe a little bit of pressure on Turnbull into this start. You might remember Turnbull actually made his Phillies debut against the Reds earlier this year back on April 2nd. He was really good. He did not give up a run over five innings pitch. Didn't walk anyone. Struck out three batters. Only Reds to get a hit in that game. Will Benson doubled. And Christian Encarnacion Strand and Spencer Steer each had singles. Turnbull, a career 1.69 ERA in three starts against the Reds. The last time that Spencer Turnbull pitched at Great American Ballpark was in 2020 with the Tigers. So this will actually be the first time that Turnbull's ever pitched at Great American Ballpark in front of fans. All right, for the Reds, it'll be Nick Lodolo. Can't get off to a much better start than the season than Lodolo has been. 2-0, 0.75 ERA. His last time out was brilliant, 6 1/3 against the Angels, just one earned run, no walks, and six strikeouts. Believe it or not, Lodolo's actually made four career starts against the Phillies, 1-0 with a 2.22 ERA. Lodolo made two starts back in 2022, two more starts last year in 2023. Lodolo made one really great start at the Phillies back on April 9th of last season. He went seven innings, just gave up three hits, no runs, two walks, and struck out 12. Lodolo's never faced Bryce Harper. Doesn't look like he's going to this series as Harper's still on the paternity leave. But the active Phillies overall against Lodolo, 17 for 66. That's a 7.04 OPS. Alec Boehm is 3 for 11 with a double. Castellanos 2 for 10. Realmuto 2 for 10 with a triple. Kyle Schwarber 1 for 8. But that one hit was a home run. Well, thanks so much for everyone for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Really appreciate all the support. If you've not yet subscribed or ever listened to this podcast, make sure you do that now. We have new podcasts the morning after every single Reds game. And of course, be sure to subscribe as well on Chatterbox Sports over on YouTube, where we do live post-game shows after every Reds game and have a lot of other great sports content for you as well. I've asked several times, really would appreciate if you could leave us a five-star review wherever you listen to this podcast. Thank you so much to everyone that has already done that. That is a tremendous help to us. If you want one thing just to support us and what we do here at Chatterbox Reds, just leaving us a quick five-star review is the best way to do it, and we would really appreciate that. Of course, as well, be sure to check out all of our other Chatterbox Sports programming off the bench, 10 a.m. to noon on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Trace and the guys will be talking, I'm sure, about this big Reds win, getting you all set for the NFL draft this week and more. And then we also, 3 to 5 p.m., have the Kinner and Kev show. That is a simulcast from 1410 Wing AM in Dayton, their afternoon sports talk. We have the video feed live in beautiful HD on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Well, thanks so much for listening. Really do appreciate it. Hope that you have a fantastic Wednesday. And most importantly, go Reds.